Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Voices Daughters podcast series. Once again, we are speaking with Tim Crossland, the director of Plan B, and he's going to be speaking with us today about how the Commission on Human Rights of the Philippines is launching a legal case to make fossil fuel companies accountable for extreme weather events, and we'll be discussing much more, pretty much along the lines of the outcome of the recent presidential election, but we'll get to that more in our discussion. And Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Matt. Yeah, thank you. How about you?
Doing well. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and thanks for joining us once again. And let's jump right in, and let's talk about the case in the Philippines. And if you don't mind, give us a high-level overview of this case and what really brought it about.
Okay, well, the petitioners in this case, led by Greenpeace Southeast Asia, have brought a claim to the Philippines Human Rights Commission alleging a range of violations of fundamental human rights by the carbon majors, such as Exxon, including in particular the right to life. And this is because climate change is killing people in the Philippines now, and it's going to kill lots more people there in the future. And the petitioners are going to court to try and stop that happening. And I'll give you just a little bit more about, you know, the factual circumstances of all of this. The 10 deadliest typhoons in the Philippines between 1947 and 2014, of those, five have occurred since 2006. And seven of those typhoons have killed more than 1,000 people. The worst of those, Typhoon Yolanda in 2013, killed 6,300 people, more than twice as many people as died in 9/11, and displaced 4 million citizens. And there's really, really good scientific evidence that this is down to man-made climate change. That extra warmth is putting more energy into the weather system, and it's making the storms more violent and more dangerous. And for the Philippines, which is a collection of lots and lots of islands, it's really hard to defend against that. And people are extremely vulnerable. So that is the factual background. We then get on to the question of, who is responsible for this? People are dying in growing numbers, but without accountability, without responsibility, things are only going to get worse. Now, one thing's clear, it's definitely not the people of the Philippines. Because if you look at their contribution to this problem, their emission of greenhouse gases, it is way, way, way below their share of the carbon budget. That's the safe carbon budget. So it's not them. And there are two really important bits of work that have helped to assign responsibility. One is by a Californian called Rick Heedy, a geographer, whose work has shown that the majority of global greenhouse gas emissions can be attributed to just 90 corporate entities. 47 of them are investor-owned, and they are the subject of this petition. And then we've also seen work from some investigative journalists that is quite well known, particularly in the US at the moment, that identified that Exxon in particular have known about these risks from climate change for many, many decades, but that far from acting on that information, they've deliberately set out to provide misinformation in order to protect their profit lines. So what we've really got in this petition are the petitioners going to the commission in the Philippines and saying, our people are dying here. Whose fault is that? What are you going to do to protect us? And that is what this case is all about.
Wow. Now, would you consider this to be an unprecedented case? And, you know, as it, I guess, looking forward, projecting into what the case is all about, do you think it will lead to long-term change? I guess it's a two-part question there.
Sure, sure. Well, I think people like to describe cases as new and unprecedented because it can make for good headlines. And in one sense, you know, it's true of this. This is the first time that a case is focused on the carbon majors, the parties responsible for human rights violations from climate change. So the facts of this are certainly new, certainly interesting. But in the legal sense, this is not unprecedented. You could say the most basic and fundamental principle of law, that you're responsible for your actions. If you break it, you buy it. And more specifically, there is growing international recognition that climate change is pretty much the greatest threat to human rights that there is. And the link is explicitly made, in fact, in the Paris Agreement between climate change and human rights. So there's some really good case law emerging all over the world at the moment. So in that sense, it's not unprecedented. But assuming the Commission does apply that existing precedent to these new facts, to the facts of this case, and the pressure for them not to do so is going to be political, probably rather than legal, then the impact will be extremely profound. It'll be clear to everybody all over the world who's following this case, and lots of people are following it, that 47 investor-owned corporations are responsible for grave violations of human rights in the Philippines, but by inference, in all sorts of other places all over the world. And once the implications of that sink in and people really understand it, the madness of continuing to subsidize fossil fuels at the moment is exposed, and investment is going to start moving at scale into the development of clean technologies that can really avert. So yes, in that sense, this is a case that can really help to solve the problem of climate change.
Interesting. You know, I saw a Reuters article about this, and it said this case is similar to the legal efforts from, it might have been 20, 30 years ago, to take on tobacco companies over health damage caused by smoking. Would you say this is similar to that effort?
There are some really strong parallels with the tobacco litigation. And in fact, there's a book called The Merchants of Doubt, which documents how the fossil fuel companies have used the same PR teams as the tobacco industry to avoid regulation by marketing doubt. And there's a quote that's used there: doubt is our product. So very much the same tactics have been used, dripping into public discourse the suggestion that there is doubt about the science, even when they knew that that doubt was not there at all, to avoid regulation, to avoid accountability. The way that story ends is a case before Judge Kessler in the U.S., who found Philip Morris guilty under the U.S. RICO statute of racketeering. And I'm just going to quote something he said, because I think it is so obviously pertinent and applicable here. He says, in short, the defendants have marketed and sold their lethal product with zeal, with deception, with a single-minded focus on their financial success, and without regard for the human tragedy or social cost that success exacted. And I think we've got a very strong parallel here.
Wow. Yeah, very much so. So let's shift gears real quick and tell us about how Greenpeace, you mentioned this at the top of the call here, is the lead organization behind this case. And what are they doing to advance this case?
So there are so many people affected by this in the Philippines. There are a large number of NGOs and individual petitioners supporting this petition. But that requires some sort of organization, and Greenpeace Southeast Asia are taking the lead role in this, and really, you know, organizing things and supporting that effort. And they are also supported in that by Greenpeace International.
That's great. Now tell us about Plan B's role in this effort.
So Plan B's focus is on looking to support and find ways to support strategic climate change litigation. So what we've done here is submit what's known as an amicus brief to the court, that this is taking the role as a friend to the court in the legal terminology, and we're providing analysis of the legal issues raised, because some of the legal issues are complicated. Some of the issues around causation are complicated. So what we've done for the court is collect jurisprudence from around the world, from the US, from the UK, from Nigeria, from Kenya, and we've pulled it all together and put it before the court so that they can see that actually in making a finding of responsibility here, they would be applying international norms. They would be applying international jurisprudence. And that in that sense, there's a really good precedent for what they're being asked to do. We've also quoted some of the words of Thomas Jefferson, who says, "The first duty of government is the protection of life, not its destruction. Abandon that and you have abandoned all." Because ultimately, people in the Philippines won't accept that there is no jurisdiction to protect them here. That's what they're going to expect their government to do, to find some way to keep them safe.
Wow, that's really interesting stuff and great, great work on your part there. Now let's shift gears to the really big story. with regards to the outcome of the recent presidential election, you and I were talking earlier about this. And how do you think the outcome of the election will impact this effort and really all of our collective environmental efforts?
Well, of course, that is the question everybody's been asking this last week or so, and not just in connection with this case. And I'm going to answer it in just a little bit of a roundabout way, because the premise of Plan B was that the really angry and divided political context of our current times, and particularly in the US, meant there was no real prospect of climate change being solved through the political process, and that the rational science-based solutions, that the only conceivable way of averting catastrophe here would need to be implemented through the courts. So that was our starting premise. And from that perspective, Trump's election is a symptom of that pre-existing context. And his election just reinforces the point. So that if there's just a sliver of a silver lining here, and it's, you know, not easy to find one, it's if you think of the problem of tackling climate change as not just about denialism, but also about the false solutions and a belief that politics can do something that maybe it can't. Well, I think it's now obvious to everybody that we're going to have to find a different approach. We're going to have to negotiate the very fundamental problems in the international politics and find alternatives, find a plan B, and take action through the courts. There's
That's a great point.
Just
Fine.
One other
yeah.
thing.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
I'd like to mention here, because this isn't getting the coverage that it ought to. And so anything we can do here to draw attention to it, I think is really helpful. Just before President Obama went to Copenhagen, this was in 2009, as part of the UN climate change process, a letter was written by a coalition of business leaders. And that letter said, please don't postpone the Earth. If we fail to act now, it is scientifically irrefutable that there will be catastrophic and irreversible consequences for humanity and our planet. Now, the interesting thing about this letter is if you go through the list of signatories, you see Donald J. Trump, Donald J. Trump Jr., Eric F. Trump, Ivanka Trump, the Trump Organization. So back in 2009, the whole Trump clan were writing to President Obama demanding strong action on climate change. Now, what I would suggest is this letter is not just politically embarrassing to the Trumps, but if you think about it legally, this was a letter written with no inducements, no pressure on Trump to say anything he didn't believe in. And he appears to believe that it's scientifically irrefutable that there will be catastrophic and irreversible consequences for humanity and our planet without strong action. Now, if that ever got before a court, and a court considered his current position and the very significant inducements he's had from fossil fuel companies, the sort of sums of money they've donated to his campaign, they might well conclude that his real position was that he knows the reality of climate change, that this isn't something you can suddenly unknow in the space of 7 years. And on that basis, his actions are pretty serious. And there's some really good precedent that if leaders, if heads of state conduct actions that amount to crimes against humanity, then they will not be immune from prosecution. And failing to act, if you know that that failure to act is going to have irreversible consequences for us all, that appears to me to be a pretty serious crime against humanity. So my suggestion to Donald Trump and his clan would be to be taking some legal advice about their personal position, because this is clearly something extremely serious.
It sure is, and it really shows you how the times have changed when it comes to President-elect Donald Trump. And we really appreciate you bringing that that letter to light, because, yeah, it certainly has not gained much attention, at least in the mainstream press. So that's a fantastic find there. You know, Tim, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Love your insights. We always go deep on topics which are very relevant to our listeners and anybody who's really, a firm believer in the environment and fighting climate change. And before we sign off today, is there anything else you'd like to add? Anything we may have missed?
I think we've covered quite a lot there, Matt, and it's been really good talking to you. But I just think the last note is the one that the events of last week, it's a call to action for us all, isn't it? And we've all got to work together somehow to protect the Earth, to protect our common future.
Absolutely. You're speaking the truth there. And what a perfect way to end this interview. And for all of our listeners, once again, you heard an exclusive Voices.Earth podcast interview with Tim Crossland, the director of Plan B. And Tim was kind enough to share his insights on the legal case that's happening right now in the Philippines, as well as some insights on our new president-elect, Donald J. Trump. And Tim, as always, thanks for your time.
Many thanks, Matt. Take care. Speak soon.
Take care.